Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm really excited to have my guest today is Alan Tran. Hey, Alan.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So Alan is a filmmaker who's actually, he's been to the Sherman Oaks Film Festival twice. And needless to say, whenever a filmmaker has brought a film, he brought his film Valley to Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2020. And it was an official selection for short length drama. And it took home two awards. It took home Outstanding Short Film Drama and Outstanding Acting for a Cast Drama. And I'm a big fan of Valley. I think Valley is just a great film. And then I kind of feel like I know Alan even better because Alan came back 1 year later with the film Exits. And Exits is, I think I told you at the Q&A for that, I'm a huge fan of Valley. And then I see all kinds of growth in your filmmaking and Exits. So you brought Exits to Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021. We were back in the theater, had a great screening. People loved the film. And you took home the Grand Jury Award for Best Short Film Drama. And you took home the Filmmakers Award for Outstanding Performance by a Cast. So you're 2 for 2 winning an award for your cast, 2 for 2 winning short film drama. So, okay, the last part of this introduction, and then before we get into Alan's story, is that Alan's film Valley is going to be in the Discover Indie Film TV series. It's in season 6, episode 5. You can check it. Actually, please check it out. Just go to Amazon Prime Video, type in Discover Indie Film. And like I said, season 6, episode 5. A season is only $7.99, but this one's worth it. And you're supporting indie people. So that's my soapbox. I will hop off of my soapbox now and hand it over to Alan. Alan, as you know, I think you're a very talented filmmaker. And I warned you I was going to just ask you, what were your inspirations to get into filmmaking?
I first started, it was in high school. You know, I think that's when I first decided that, like, I wanted to make films or just be in, you know, media. You know, for the longest time, I thought I was going to, you know, be a journalist. Like, I was in the school newspaper, you know, I did that after school and everything. But it was the end of freshman year. Me and my friends, we just kind of picked up my dad's old camcorder, shot some stupid videos, and our entire summer was just, that was like what we did. We stopped playing video games. You know, we played video games all the time up until, you know, freshman year of high school. And that just became our video game, you know? We just got better. We got better, as we kept making, you know, short films through high school. That led to me deciding, you know, I'm gonna go to film school. So, you know, I went to Loyola Marymount, and graduated, and, you know, I haven't stopped making films since graduating. So it's, you know, trying to get better and find my voice.
And you were interested in journalism as a kid. Does that mean you were always kind of a writer? Like, were you a creative kid who, like, wrote stories and things growing up?
Yeah. Like, you know, when I was younger, I would write, like, these really short novels. And, I'd go to Staples and get those, like, plastic binding. I forget what they're called, but, like, it's like plastic. You put the papers in, and then you kind of, like, you know, latch it, and it feels like a book. So, you know, I think when I was younger, that's what I was doing. Eventually, like, that writing kind of led to me wanting to write for, like, publications and stuff. So hence the, you know, journalism. So it kind of evolved into that, but then it kind of, like, swung back around into more of a creative space in filmmaking. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess I have an active imagination, and try to kind of use filmmaking as an outlet for that.
For sure. And it sounds like, I mean, that was the promise of the consumer video camera, in a way that it would inspire people to understand the medium and get more into it. I think, you know, just a decade or two before, like, to experiment with filmmaking, you know, you had to develop film. You know, I mean, I knew a couple kids with Super 8 cameras and stuff, but yeah, it's really cool that you and your friends were able to get your hands on a camera and just experiment. Like, at that point, were you editing? Were you using, like, couple VCRs linked together or editing in camera?
Yeah, we I credit like my childhood friend Brian Kwan. It was always me, Brian, and I had another friend. His name is Lee. It was just like we were the trio that made this stuff. But Brian was like, he was very tech savvy, you know. So like he first decided to like, you know what, like let's just bring this into a computer. And you know, we were shooting on DV tape, so we would just kind of like, you know, connect that to our computer. And then we started on some, I think it was like Microsoft Movie Maker or something like that. But that eventually evolved to, we would get like bootleg versions of like Adobe Premiere at that time.
Which was a purely commercial version of film editing, right? The original Premiere was something that editors looked at, really, they looked down on it.
Exactly. You know, but it was our education. Like we self-taught ourselves, you know, like Brian would, you know, Brian, by the way, he's a gaffer on Valley, you know, so we're still working together. Forgot to mention that part, but yeah, he was like the first to really kind of understand like, all right, how does this non-linear editing software work? And then I would learn something and I would teach him, and then he would learn something, he would teach me. So we were just constantly self-teaching ourselves and making ourselves better. So if it weren't for him, I think like, I don't know, I probably would have tried the in-camera editing thing. But like, I think right off the bat, we started to just start, you know, even with very basic software, just understand like how cuts are made. And like eventually we got Adobe Premiere, which is more advanced than Movie Maker. We would just like, all right, that's what an L-cut is. How do you have audio go underneath something when you cut to somebody else? Like all that's very basic, but at that time I just remembered like finding so much joy in like figuring something out that's like, oh, that's like a real movie, that's what real movies do, you know. We kind of did that. So yeah, it was just the curiosity of like, you know, and we eventually got better cameras and we just kind of actually learned like how they work. Lenses, you know, play a big factor, how to light things. And, you know, the self-teaching part was very rewarding. And I think, especially with your friends, like you just grow closer because of it.
For sure. And did it change the way you were watching films and TV at that point? Like,
Oh yeah. Yeah. In high school, that's when I first started. You know, my parents never really took me to the theater as a kid. So I kind of had to like come to that on my own, you know. You know, they were working all the time. So it's not that, you know, they hated movies or anything like that. You know, they're also, you know, first generation. You know, they don't quite have the breadth of movie knowledge as, you know, so, you know, especially a lot of the films here are Western films. So it didn't really appeal to them. They didn't quite have the time to take me to the movie. So in high school, a lot of my film education was like, I mean, I'm exposing myself a little bit, but like I would download movies off like LimeWire or something like that.
Right.
You like know what I mean?
The golden era when piracy yeah. didn't feel wrong at first.
Exactly. I mean, I was, you know, I justify it as like, I was a kid in high school. I didn't have the money, to, you know, to go buy movie tickets or like, I don't know, like go to Blockbuster or something. And it was just so available. So I watched a lot of, you know, like classic films or films that you see on message boards. Just like, you got to see this. You got to see this. If you're, you know, anything of a film connoisseur or something, it's like, oh, what's this? And, you know, find it online.
Right. So you had cinephiles giving you recommendations.
Yeah. Oh, well, indirectly. Yeah.
Indirectly. Like, yeah.
On the internet. Yeah, exactly.
But so did you, were you watching like all eras and all genres and stuff? Did you like really become did you really get into watching them at that age and learning from it and then replicating things at times?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I would see something, like I would see an editing technique or like just because it kind of coincided, watching these films coincided with how I was, you know, learning to do this stuff, we really took, at least my friends and I, we really took like a more of an analytical eye and kind of like figuring out how things were done and like why they shot that shot that way. And, you know, it's a very, very early stages of film education and all that. So it's like, yeah, that's when I started to see films differently, and kind of see it as like a puzzle, you know, like a visual puzzle, but also like how to put a story together, you know. At times during that time, like a lot of the craftsmanship kind of was more of the focus rather than the storytelling, you know. But and then later on, it's like, all right, I've got these tools now I gotta focus on how to tell a story, because that's a completely different muscle. So yeah, it's like just an evolution of like seeing something that I liked and trying to copy it, but then eventually kind of like start to find what my actual voice is, you know, as a creative.
Yeah. And was that at Loyola, or
yeah,
when you,
I mean,
started developing your voice, or like was it even during high school?
You know, I think it's like, you know, early on I think it was a lot of like trying to do things that I liked to watch, you know, or I found something inspiring. It's like, you know what, I want to do something like that. So, you know, even in film school at Loyola. So I think it takes a little growing, at least for me, it takes a little growing up, growing out of things where it's like, should stop trying to be this thing and just try to like tell the story that I want to tell, you know? And that happened after college, you know, just having the perspective that like I should stop telling stories that I feel that don't really connect with me, you know. Valley was really the first project that I felt was coming from a place that I truly cared about. It's about my hometown, it's about how I grew up, it's a coming of age thing, you know. So that allowed me to really break free from, you know, doing projects I felt like people wanted to see, or like trying to hit a certain pocket, you know.
So and Loyola was undergrad film, yeah, or
undergrad, yes.
So in that program and even before, but you were sort of being a crowd pleaser in a way, or you weren't writing personal stories yet.
I wasn't writing personal. Like there was a resistance to that, actually. Like, I wouldn't call it like I was doing crowd pleasing work. It was more so that I was very impressionable, you know. Like for instance, in college, like I really liked like these political thrillers. You know what I mean? And you know, at that time I was watching a lot of that stuff and just kind of like, it didn't have to be political, but like, you know, it was just like thrillers that kind of were in a more clinical space almost. So I would, you know, I made like two projects that were kind of in that vein or in that genre. But these weren't stories that like I truly connected to. It was just like, I wanted to scratch that itch and make something like that, you know, rather than like looking within myself and saying like, this is the story that means something, or it's like I'm trying to say something, whether or not, you know, I don't want to be didactic about anything that I tell, but I just wanted to kind of get to a certain like emotional truth. So you know, that took a while for me to really like, you know, that's a place that it took a while for me to get to. Yeah, just put it that way.
And it sounds like the political thrillers or the thriller, it sounds like you were, you know, those were sort of exercises in a way. Like you were working on craft, working on a, you know, filmmaking takes so much knowledge, really. There's so many, you know, I think, I forget who I was talking to. Oh, I'm ashamed. Maybe it was Jake Whiston, but saying how film truly brings so many disciplines together. You know, it's not just picture, it's not just sound, it's not just music, it's not, you know, it's is literally everything put together. It's writing, it's photography, it's music, it's editing. Yeah, there's so many disciplines that go into film. So there's a lot to grasp.
Yeah. No, that's totally right. I mean, it's a very diversified medium. And, you know, the image is just one part of it. The sound is one part of it. The story is one part of it. You kind of have to be firing on all cylinders to have the biggest impact for the story that you want to tell. But it's beautiful when all that stuff kind of like collides and works together, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you emerged from your 4-year program and you still loved film after 4 years of that. And then was Valley the first thing that you wrote after school, or was there more?
It was not the first thing I wrote after school. I did write a few things and I did shoot a few things. But they were like, I co-directed and co-wrote them with somebody else. They were mostly comedies, actually. It's like a completely different space than you know, my recent work. But I think although I enjoyed those projects, it wasn't like, I don't know, like when I finished those projects, I just felt like I didn't really feel like it didn't feel rewarding. And it's not because it wasn't like truly my own thing. It was just like, again, I was telling stories that like, that I don't know, that I felt like I would forget. That I would forget, you know, of my own volition, you know, down the road or something. Like it just didn't quite like stick with me, in some way. I don't know.
Alan is looking at my face, like smile hugely after you said that, because I think that is stories that you forget is, I mean, as someone who programs 2 film festivals a year, like it is those memorable films that you know, a couple years later I can talk to a jury member and say, you know, remember the Ditch Day film, and they'll know it, right? I think you nailed every artist's greatest fear, which is like, if the work doesn't mean something to them, it's not going to mean something to the audience, and it becomes forgettable.
I think that there's some validity to that. You know, at the same time, it's also like very subjective. Like something could mean something to me, but you know, somebody might not really connect with it the same, and that's totally fine. But it's like, at the very least, you want to be able to, you know, tell a story that means something to you, so that,
yeah, if it means something to you, right,
it's like it means something to you,
right? If it means something to you, you've got a shot that it'll mean something to other people. But if you make a film and your heart's not in it, it doesn't mean something to you, then the odds of an audience being like, wow, that really meant something to me, it probably is not going to happen, right? But I totally respect just what you said, that, you know, not everything's for everyone, right? Like, just isn't, like,
Right.
You can't worry about pleasing everybody. In fact, that's one of the things I love when I love disagreement over film. Actually, I think it's really cool when like a jury member will say to me, you know, they love X film. I'm like, wow, I had a low rating on that. That's really interesting. You know, I just love the subjectivity of it, and that, yeah, not everything's for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you were collaborating, was that with one of the friends you grew up with, or was it with a film school friend, or?
It was one of the friends that that I grew up with, but who incidentally went to the same school that I did. We're still in contact and we still work together, you know, but I think we've just, you know, reached a point where like we want to maybe tell the stories that we wanted to tell. And you know, it's like a mutual respect. And again, you know, it's not like we're not working together anymore. It's just,
For sure. And I got to say, bravo to finishing 4 years of school and then going into the real world and continuing to create. Cause you know, a lot of people don't pull it off or don't have the dedication.
No, it's tough. It's tough. Because I feel like a lot of people want to do it. It's just that, you know, I think when you get out of school, you're out of that bubble, and resources become much more difficult, and you don't have like that bubble of peers that you can pull from and work on your, you know, in your film and everything. So, you really have to want it and want to do it after that point. Yeah.
And I mean, I was just gonna, I'm gonna throw you a Valley compliment again and say that, I mean, like you, going back to the topic of the story being meaningful to you, I think that is absolutely what I love about it. I think I probably in our Q&A for the festival mentioned how authentic it is and how, you know, we identify with these two friends, you know, on Senior Ditch Day. Like I think it's because it's so sincere and because it's so authentic to what friendship is like. That's why as an audience member, I just completely enjoy. It's just so emotionally rewarding to see something real like that. And it reminds you of your friends and who you grew up with and who you've lost and who you haven't lost, like not lost to death, although that's happened, but you know, friends drifting apart. It's human story. It's very human.
Thank you. But yeah, that was always the goal, is that, you know, I wanted to create something that, like, with Valley, it was just a way to, in a way, recreate the joy of that time, of that high school time that I alluded to earlier, you know, my own filmmaking journey and all that. But also kind of lend it the perspective, you know, of an older version of myself, you know. You know, the biggest one of the inspirations for Valley actually is a recent film, fairly recent, Lady Bird, you know, Greta Gerwig, you know, that film affected me in a way. Like, I'm not a, you know, I didn't grow up as a teenage girl. I'm the opposite spectrum, right? But there's that common ground. I think the biggest takeaway from that film for me is that, like, you know, Lady Bird had to leave her hometown, Sacramento, in her case, in order to get an appreciation of where she came from. You know, the whole film, she wanted to get away. You know, she wanted to go to New York, go to school in New York, never look back. But it was that homesickness, you know, that drew her back and really made her appreciate Sacramento. And in a way, the San Gabriel Valley, that, to me, that's, you know, what Valley is. It's, you know, the two teenage characters, you know, one wants to leave, one wants to stay. But sometimes it takes leaving to really understand what you've lost. You took, you know, your hometown for granted. There's a lot of good there, that, you know, a lot of memories that you created there that you might hate in the moment, but, you know, over time, you kind of see things differently. So Valley, to me, that's really what it's about. And you know, I think when I first came up with the idea of Valley, it preceded Lady Bird, but after seeing Lady Bird, like, I think that really formed what the theme was for me for that film. Yeah.
When you're making me think of your story, and for those who don't know, Loyola Marymount is in a really nice part. Well, it's in the heart of LA in a way. It's not even that far from the beach. And I imagine a lot of people who go to that school stay closer in, like, to here. But you, did you contemplate, like, staying in the heart of LA and you know, getting a shitty apartment and trying to make it as a filmmaker here, or was it like, you know what, I'm too practical. I'm going back to San Gabriel and I'm going to do my work there.
Yeah. You know, I say that as if, like, I left the San Gabriel Valley and, you know, went to another state or something, but no, I really just went like an hour west or something. Right.
But an hour is an hour.
Exactly. The thing is, LA is so sprawling, right? And even if you stay, if you live in a different part of town, you know, it's like it could feel very different from another part of town, like just, you know, farther east or something like that. It feels like a small town almost. You know, if you come from somewhere that's not part of LA proper or something like that. But yeah, the feeling's the same, you know. I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that, like, if you're not staying with your parents, you feel like you're, even if you're just down the street, you're not home or something like that. But so, yeah, I mean, yeah, moving out west or whatever. In fact, right now I'm living in the San Fernando Valley. I'm in Studio City right now. I'm not, you know, physically living in San Gabriel, but I go back all the time. But it's the same difference. Like, you go back, you feel like you're back home or something. Even if it is just like a 30-minute drive.
How did I not know do you know I grew up in Studio City?
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was Sherman Oaks, but
I grew up in Studio City, but then I was away for, not that anyone cares, but I was away for 15, 20 years, and then I actually returned to the Valley and ended up in Sherman Oaks, which is, for those who don't know, Sherman Oaks and Studio City are side-by-side neighborhoods in the San Fernando Valley, which when you pass from one to the other, it's just crossing a street light. It's not, there's no identifiable change.
Exactly. True. I can attest to that, I suppose.
But that's cool. That's cool you're out here now. And after Valley, so Valley, I assume you shot it pre-COVID, and then mm-hmm. its festival run was in the land of lockdowns.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then was Exits when did you know Exits would be the next project?
Yeah, I think I cracked that story in December of 2020. Yeah. Before we got on this, before we started recording, I suppose, like, we were talking, I mentioned that I went up to Oregon. So it was actually during that trip, in December 2020, I took a trip to Oregon, drove there and I just hiked up the state. So, you know, it was one of those things where you're on the trail or whatever. Well, you know, you're just kind of left to your own thoughts. But I knew I wanted to shoot something, in the new year, 2021 at that point. Just didn't know what it would be. There's a lot of unknowns in terms of production, at least at that time, because, you know, we were still in the throes of peak COVID. And just knew I needed to make something that was like small crew, small cast, should be one location. I was just thinking about my mom while I was on the trails. My mom passed away a couple of years ago, and it was in December. So usually around that time, I always, you know, just can't help but think about, you know, those things. And it's just one of those things where, like, I just felt like every year that goes by, I might lose a piece of my mom a little more, at least like mentally or something. And it just got, I don't know, the tangents just kind of went towards, like, you know, if somebody passes away, they're not literally gone. You're not, I mean, sure they are, but like to you, they may not be. So, you know, I think from those themes just kind of arose, you know, Exits. That was, you know, that's when I first cracked the story. And then, like, I got back from the trip and then I just spent the weekend writing. And that's what came about from it.
Very cool. Yeah. Because, yeah, it is about loss. And you were thinking about a personal loss. And, but it's a very creative, you know, for, needless to say, I saw in 2021 a whole lot of films that were one or two people in a space, during COVID, you know, shot during COVID, but not about COVID, but in that way. And I guess, I don't know if we should worry about spoilers or not, but what you do with your two characters in that apartment, I think was just way more creative than the average shot in a bubble sort of film. You know, because it's a bit supernatural and it's a bit otherworldly and wonderfully shot.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you think so. Yes, it was wonderfully shot. You know, my DP, in my work with Gun Valley as well, Sonny Wong. You know, he's amazing. You know, he creates things out of nothing. And you know, makes me look good because of it. But yeah, I think the goal was to try to make something like totally different than, especially in structure as well. Because I know there's like a lot of films about, you know, two people in an apartment, two people in a space or something like that. I just wanted to see like, you know, what I can do with my resources, which weren't many, but also kind of tell an interesting, I don't know, like story. I'm still not sure if that film works entirely.
I remember you saying that at the film festival in 2021, and there was a good crowd there that night, and I had praised it, and you're like, I don't know if this film works for me, and you had, I think, many members of the audience were like coming up to you and saying, I thought your film was, you know, I think people truly appreciated it.
I hope so. I hope that's true. It's just one of those things where like I knew the limitations of it, and this structure is still kind of odd to me. And, you know, there's like things about it that like has always been there when I first, you know, put it to paper or whatever, that's never left me. But it's like, I just wanted to make something. I'm going to make it and see what happens, and, you know, try to create something that's maybe a little bizarre. But so, yeah, I don't know. It's like it's almost, it still kind of remains like an experiment to me in terms of like experiment of tone, experiment of like performance, which the actors did fantastic jobs of, you know, Kelly Lou Dennis and Jay Kimber, they both were amazing in it. But it's just a really weird way of kind of conveying dialogue, especially if they're just speaking in a monologue form the entire time. So it's like, I just feel like, I don't know, like maybe, I don't know how I would have done it differently, but it's really hard to get out of my own head about like things that never quite gelled in script form for me. But anyway, I'm rambling. But
I know, like, no, it's honestly, it's a fascinating subject. I don't often find myself trying to talk people into liking their own work. But I also think there's actually, you know, I'm not saying you don't like it, but it is interesting that something that strikes me as narratively sophisticated and showing a lot of intelligence and maturity and thoughtfulness. But, you know, hey, we already covered early in this podcast that not everything's for everyone.
Right. Exactly.
So for you, in a way, I guess for you, it was sort of a challenge project of making something before vaccines were common. I mean, things were still, it is funny to think about what the world was like in the first half of 2020 when, you know, you had to be in the military or over 70 to get a vaccine. I mean, it was a very limiting time. So you were certainly working with some serious limits.
Yeah. And so were a lot of people, you know, I feel like at that time they were trying to make something. So yeah, it's like, I don't think that project, it's one of those things where I don't think that project would have existed if it had it been, had COVID not existed or whatever, you know, because I don't think I would have naturally come up with that story. Like, I probably would have tried to tell another story and it would have been another film, you know, in a different timeline or something like that. But because like I knew the limitations of what I needed to make a film at that time. Like my mind just kind of like funneled its way there, you know? So.
Well, what can I say? I think it shows a lot of talent and promise that I like it so much and other people liked it. So I clearly remember audience members like coming up to you afterwards and telling you how much they liked it. So, and I continue to like it. I think it's very, well, hey, what can I say? Our awards jury liked it too. So
oh, we're very grateful.
No worries. Yeah. Okay. I'll stop harping on it. I apologize if I'm too stuck on it.
Not at all. It's just my own insecurities from that creative process that's kind of stuck. You know what I mean? It has nothing to do. I'm glad people, you know, like it. And people who have seen it like it. Some don't, and that's totally okay. But you know, it's just like a weird personal, like, I don't know, feeling I'm holding on to for when I made it. That's all it is. Yeah.
Sure. Well, have you been writing since then, or is there sounds like you're a very productive person, or is there more coming down the pipeline?
I think the next thing I want to make is actually a horror short. That, you know, I'm aiming to get it shot by the end of this year. That's the goal, at least, you know. But I think that's very likely my next thing is a horror short.
Cool. And I know this is a leading question. I hope I'm not getting the wrong answer, but I mean, you're in Studio City. For those who don't, I mean, it's kind of it's named Studio City because there's a TV studio there. And are you working jobs in the industry now and getting a toehold?
Yeah. My day job, you know, by trade, I'm actually a post producer. So I mostly work in television. And I'm currently working on a show. Technically I'm still on the clock. I have my email right here, but I'm trying not to pay any mind while we're talking here, but
and it is 9:20 PM. So if anyone thinks, oh man, he's doing this in the middle of the day at work. No, it's just, you're on the clock. But so post producer? So,
yeah,
is it like not post production supervisor, but like just managing certain post things? Like,
yeah. It's, so I work on the show side. So, you know, I'm like directly connected to whatever show I'm working for. So yeah, like it's, you know, I don't personally do any of the editing. That's the editors and you know, there's the assistant editors and everything. And there's post-production supervisors part of my team. You know, and under that is a coordinator. And just, you know, I mean, that's just the structure of what it is. But yeah, we basically just, work specifically on the post-production side of things for a given television show.
Very cool. I'm happy for you. That sounds like a good gig.
Yeah, that's the route that my career has taken me. But that being said, you know, it's like I'm always chasing to be on the creative side. So, you know, it's not necessarily my end game. Just have to keep sharpening those creative muscles, you know.
Oh man, this is, I apologize to all the good people who do this while they're pursuing their creative goals. But I mean, it sounds a little better than like being a barista or a bartender.
Look, I mean, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, if somebody, whatever trade somebody's in, if they're a barista or bartender, usually, you know, if they have a passion on the side that they're pursuing, it's really the same thing, you know? Even though, like, you know, what I'm doing now is like adjacent to like writing or directing or what have you. It's really separate. It's really a separate part of that machine, you know?
Right. And there's not things you're learning on the job that you can apply to your creative side, because
there is, but it's like making the leap from where I am to the creative side of things is still a big leap, because you know, it's one of those things. It's funny because it's like you could work in the industry for a very long time, and whatever role that you've taken that's not necessarily creative, people only see you as that.
Absolutely. It's like there's a block wall surrounding that writer's room.
Right. Or the director's chair or what have you, right? It's like,
yeah,
you almost have to, you really have to prove yourself from a creative standpoint. And because, yeah, it's like they see you as a post person, they see you as a post person. You see it as like a props person, they see you as a props person. Even if your passion might be to like make that leap, it's still, again, it's like a very big leap that, you know, me and a lot of people are still trying to crack, especially if you want to be on that creative side. But yeah, that's beside the point. Short story is like, I'm working in post right now, but you know, which I love, but I want to pursue, you know, more creative roles in the industry. That's why I'm making, you know, these short films and stuff.
Yeah. And do you just see yourself continuing to make shorts? Any thoughts about features and things, or it's
oh, yeah. The short films are an outlet to like, because they just make more sense from like from a resource standpoint, and just like, at least for me, you know, like some people can make indie features and they do, but for me, like I feel like, you know, the short film format allows me to create different projects, different like vibes and tones, and just kind of show what I can do, and like, you know, allow me to sharpen those muscles. Like, if, you know, going to a horror short, that'll help me learn what it takes to make horror. If I want to make coming of age thing, where it's like I can do that and not spend, you know, a larger amount of time or a larger amount of resources and money just for this one feature. At least that's my perspective. You know, people are different, filmmakers are different. But as far as the feature side, you know, I have written features just to say, like I have done it and kind of understand like what goes into feature film writing. That's completely different from short film writing. You know, the structure is different and how you use, you know, the amount of page you have, very different. So again, you know, it's just trying to do a little bit of, at least at this point, do a little bit of everything to make sure, you know, I know what I'm capable of. Yeah.
Yeah. I've said to people before, I think one of the reasons why I enjoy shorts so much is, you know, a short, if you have one really good idea, you can make a short. But if you want to make a feature, you need so many good ideas to last that hour and a half. So
right, mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is a very different beast, and you know. But I'm happy for you that you're working in the industry and you're staying productive and doing things for yourself while you you know, do something for while you were working full time. And, you know, are you at CBS Television Center over there? And is that where the show is, in Studio City?
No, actually, we're, some post teams currently are remote. Some still go into the office, but we actually don't, my show doesn't shoot in LA. It shoots like out of state. So, you know, all the footage and you know, our servers are all remote. So like, you know, I work from home and not in the studio a lot or anything. Yeah.
That is cool. That's pretty cool. That's, I gotta say, I work from home too. I think it's a very cool thing.
Yeah. I mean, can't really complain. Sometimes I do wish, you know, I had human contact, but
it gets tricky, right? Yeah. For sure. Well, hey, we'll do another mixer. You'll have to come. Anything else you want to, anything you want to mention? Sarah?
not, I don't, anything I want to mention. Well, you know, if you want to follow my work, I suppose, I have a website, allanzhangtran.com, A-L-L-A-N-Z-H-A-N-G.
Yeah, Z-H-A-N-G is Zhang. Yeah, I don't know if you wanted me to introduce you with Zhang. I just did Alan Tran.
Yeah, Alan Tran. No, that's what I go by. It's only when I make films and put my name on it. That's my mom. That's my maiden name. So I just want to honor my mom. That's it. Yeah.
Excellent. Is there, and that's the website?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Just a very basic website, but I post, you know, my work there and upcoming work there. So.
And are you free of social media, or do you do a little bit of it?
I do. I have an Instagram. Handle is Mr.TranMan. I don't post often, so I'm not a very good follow, but I'm on there. Yeah.
Fair enough. I will wrap it up. I will get us out of here. First of all, you should see the film Valley. You should watch it. You should go to Amazon Prime Video, type in Discover Indie Film and search for it, and watch season 6, episode 5, and enjoy Valley. It has a cool film, kind of a sci-fi film called Lifelike opens for it. And if you want to learn more about the podcast or the TV series that was born out of it, you just go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIFWind. By the way, I didn't beg people to like and subscribe and give 5 stars, but please like and subscribe to the podcast. If you watch the show on Prime Video, take the time to go to Amazon.com and give the TV series 5 stars, you know? Alan's had 2 films 2 years in a row at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. If you want to learn more about it, go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. Its sister festival that we hold every June is Filmvasion Los Angeles. You can learn more about that if you go to filminvasionla.com, and it's at filminvasionla on social media. Alan Tran, it was a pleasure to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, and thank you everyone for listening.